curls into her hand as her cheeks turn pink. I had no idea it was so serious. Alice and I work together every day, and yet she has said little to me about this man. Perhaps she thinks I'm too old to have useful insights. Or does she simply not value my counsel? Is it what you want? I try this time to keep judgment out of my voice. I don't know. How does one know such a thing? Time presses in on me. I had hoped to present her with her future today, and I will admit I was anticipating the relief of putting the paper into such capable hands. The room wobbles on a wave of nausea. She looks toward the clock on the mantel. We'd best be off, or you'll be late for your speech. She snatches her coat from the rack by the door and takes my arm as we head for our carriage. She shortens her gait to match mine. We find the women's pavilion among the acres of exhibits, canals, and attractions of the fair, and enter the auditorium through the door behind the stage. When Alice parts the curtain, the applause rushes at us, and I wonder for a moment if we have interrupted someone else's remarks. She cups my elbow and guides me to the dais. Hundreds of people fill the seats, their smooth faces looking up at me. This is what will make the 1,000 rattling miles from Boston to Chicago worth it. My body is too much of a burden for that kind of travel anymore. I scan the audience until I find my touchstone. I've always done this, picked out one person in the room to use as a bellwether for how my message is being received. I'm not used to having so many friendly faces to choose from. In the early days, I would often have to utilize a snarling, bearded man as my measuring stick. But even that would suffice. Today, I find a young woman about 10 rows back who looks quite a bit like I did in my youth. She is petite, with thick brown hair pulled neatly off her face, and her smile accentuates pleasantly rounded cheeks. She even has my bright gray eyes. I decide to name her Hope. I look down at my prepared remarks, entitled The Progress of 50 Years, and wonder if I should use this time to deliver an entirely different speech. Perhaps I should raise the question of whether what we've achieved can be called progress at all, if women are forced to decide between professional opportunity and love. Which will Alice choose? Hope unfolds and refolds a handkerchief in her lap. She is anxious for me to begin, is perhaps even worried that I will falter. I owe her the talk she came to hear. I grip the podium, scan my notes, and speak. 3 years, even before the last 50, marks the beginning of true progress, with the opening of a door, the door to education. When the first college in this country decided to allow women, it finally gave our sex access to the tree of knowledge, to a root system that could nourish our starving minds. I remind Hope that once the spread of truth and knowledge began, it could not be stopped. Professional barriers were the next to fall. I tell her of my great friend, Nett, who was the first female to be ordained as a Protestant minister, and Elizabeth Blackwell, the first female doctor licensed in the country. Hope is smiling and nodding. She is with me now. I note the many guilds and organizations available to women, and perhaps most importantly, how the right for us to speak in public at all was won. Rows of shoulders relax into my words as they pour forth. Heads bob up and down with satisfaction. That's when I see her, sitting in the front row of the balcony. How did I not notice her bright red shawl and wire-rimmed glasses earlier? Susan B. Anthony, as thin and prim as ever.